The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from teenvogue.com and theteenmagazine.com. Our first article today is a Teen Vogue article, Model Sisters Yumi Nu and Natalie Newtonboom on Representation, the Fashion Industry, and Finding Their Roots. And this article is written by Monica Kim. It's 5 o'clock on a Tuesday, and the doors have just opened at Petite Paulette, a French bistro-style wine bar that grazes the southern edge of Fort Greene Park in Brooklyn. Lively swing music drifts through the speakers, and just outside the window, rows of white daffodils are already in bloom. The charming locale is a favorite of Yumi Nu, the 25-year-old model musician who has just moved out of her house in Silver Lake, Los Angeles, and into an apartment a few blocks away. The move was precipitated by her sudden rise in fashion, first landing an appearance in Sports Illustrated last July, then the September cover of American Vogue a few months later, becoming the first Asian plus-size model to do so. "This is very cute," she says, entering the bar dressed in a black duster coat and cozy gray sweater, apropos given the brisk April weather. Her hair is neatly pulled back into a low bun, and classic gold hoops dangle from her ears. A few minutes later, her younger sister and fellow model musician Natalie Newtonboom arrives, having flown in from their family home near Las Vegas for the occasion. Natalie, 21, is wearing a solid red tank top and a necklace with a dragon clutching a pearl in its mouth, her hair loosely braided to the side. Shrugging off her coat, she reveals a tattoo of the word awareness on her inner right elbow, while a red snake slithers across her left forearm. "I did metal for a bit. Now I'm doing rock music," Natalie says later, speaking with the cool, confident manner that helped her become the first plus-size model to walk the runway for Anna Sui when she was only 16 years old. The sisters share an easy rapport. Natalie has a very dry sense of humor, cracking self-deprecating jokes with a practiced poker face that leaves her sister in stitches. They say a bit of distance has helped them grow closer. They tried living together for a bit in L.A., but it was not happening. "We know our boundaries," Yumi says. Agreeing, Natalie adds, "You almost have flashbacks to growing up." Like many other famous sisters, Yumi and Natalie have found themselves climbing the ranks of the fashion world in near tandem, which has felt challenging at times given the comparative lack of opportunities for plus-size Asian models. "But I'm so lucky to have seen sisters like Gigi and Bella Hadid, Dakota and Elle Fanning, who lift each other up though they're in the same industry," says Natalie. "It's like we're on the same team." Beyond blood, the sisters are bonded by their mission to champion body inclusivity and Asian American representation in media. "I didn't have anyone that looked like me growing up, so now I'm fulfilling that for myself and for others who look like me," Yumi says, to which Natalie heartily agrees. Yumi and Natalie were born 4 years apart. "We're both Libras," Natalie interjects, "in Englewood, New Jersey, and seemed destined for greatness." Their mother, Kana Grace Newtonboom, is the eldest daughter of Hiroki Rocky Aoki, the restaurateur who popularized Japanese teppanyaki cooking through Benihana. Supermodel Devon Aoki is their aunt, and DJ and record producer Steve Aoki is their uncle. These girls have a lot of ambition and a lot of drive, and I noticed that when they were very young, says Steve, who signed Yumi to his record label Deem Mak when she was 21 years old, and introduced Natalie to his music mentor Dan Cena as a teen. "I'm just so proud of them. What these girls do is push themselves far beyond the limitations that are in front of them and conquer their previous selves. For that, Yumi and Natalie give credit back to their uncle. He was a huge influence on us for music and also embracing our Asian roots, Yumi says. Steve and Devon were both breaking barriers on their own, and our grandfather Americanized Japanese cuisine and broke his own barrier. We're surrounded by these people who are always pushing the edge of what could be possible. Yet the sisters had a grounded upbringing that nurtured creativity and open conversation. Their father, Brent, a creative soul, passed on his artistic inclinations. They recall spending time in the garage, where he would play an eclectic mix of records, Sade for Yumi, Ozzy Osbourne for Natalie, and create collage art to hang on the walls. For their birthdays, he would arrange elaborate scavenger hunts, placing pictures of animals onto construction paper with messages and clues. He's a very creative person, even in the way he hides gifts. So I think to be around somebody like that can't not be inspired, Yumi says. He gave us so much space to grow, Natalie adds, noting that he let her, a young animal lover, raise all the pets she desired. I had maybe 6 guinea pigs at once, and he made this giant cage for all of them. Now we have snakes. We have a 6-foot-long boa constrictor. From their mother, a marriage and family therapist, they received emotional intelligence and a propensity for self-reflection that helped their family through difficult times. When Yumi was 7 and Natalie 3, the family moved to Maryland, where they spent 7 years in a predominantly white community. Maryland's hard because there's not a lot of Asian people, so you grow up sticking out like a sore thumb, Natalie says. Once at the dentist's office, another child in the waiting room pulled the corners of his eyes up, and an innocent Natalie had to ask her mother what he meant. Oh, no, I didn't know that, Yumi responded to Natalie's story, adding that she'd wondered what her sister's experience with race was like growing up. I wasn't trying to show my Japanese side. I wasn't thinking, oh, I wish someone looked like me, because I didn't want to look like me, Yumi says, remembering how her classmates would tell her she looked like Brenda Song from The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody, then one of the only Asian American faces on mainstream kids' TV. They would say, you look like Brenda Song or Mulan, who's a cartoon character, Natalie adds. Feeling the strain, the Newton Booms moved to Newport, California, where Kana had grown up, and the girl's grandmother still lived. In Maryland, my mom went into survival mode and kind of raised us in a whitewashed way, Yumi explains. So until we moved in with my grandma, we didn't really know much about our Asian heritage, our culture. There's a lot of toxicity in the culture that I didn't like, Natalie adds. For years, I felt I didn't want to be Asian because I didn't want to be put in a box. Like, I have to be really small and petite, and I have to be subservient and put my head down, she says about the stereotypical Asian woman misnomer. Then one day, her grandmother, who had finished writing her autobiography, asked Natalie to read it to her out loud. Her perseverance and work ethic, that attitude of there's no choice, just do it, was so inspiring, she says. The more time I spent around my grandmother, the more I began to fall in love with my culture. Yumi calls it a game of catch-up. She's been taking Japanese lessons from an older man over Zoom, who creates educational PowerPoint presentations illustrated with photos of his cat. They spent the early days of the pandemic building even deeper bonds with their mother's family, holing up at their Uncle Steve's house for mini mindfulness retreats. In the very beginning, Natalie wouldn't last 30 seconds in the ice bath, Steve recalls. Then she eventually wanted to break the record and was in there for 45 minutes. It was incredible. This summer, the girls will head to Japan for a 10-day trip with their family to attend an annual boat race in their late grandfather's name. I was not trying to show my Japanese side, and now it's a 180, she says. I'm trying to make up and heal those years. This change of mindset coincided for Yumi with a general self-awakening that occurred in 2016. Even with my body, I was like, I'm so tired of not liking myself or wanting to be thinner, waiting to look a certain way to be happy with myself. So I just started embracing all sides of myself, she says. She credits social media, which she describes as a double-edged sword, for helping her find perspective. Social media was the first representation of people like me, because that was the only free space that wasn't gatekept as a medium, she says, of discovering body-positive influencers and activists on Instagram. I was like, oh, there's actually people like me that like themselves and are happy and confident, and I saw that it's possible. When Yumi began focusing on her modeling career in high school, the plus industry wasn't even a thing, she says. It was either you're a size 14, the sample size for plus, or you're a size 2, or you don't work. My career was such a slow snowball. To be the first Asian plus model featured in Sports Illustrated's annual swimsuit issue was a milestone. As for the cover of Vogue, she was moving into her house in Silver Lake when her agent gave her the call. She sat on the floor in disbelief and burst into tears. Everyone's like, was this always your dream? I'm like, I didn't even know it could be a dream, Yumi says. For me to be on the cover of American Vogue and not change anything about myself is a true testament of where we're going. Natalie followed in her footsteps not long after, because I had seen my sister do it, and then I've seen Devon do it, and I think my mom was a model, so I felt like it's in my legacy, she says, laughing. I'm just grateful there are changes at all, because I remember growing up in the era of the low-rise jean and being like, I can't wear that because I have a muffin top, Natalie goes on. Oh my God, Natalie, Yumi opines with a laugh. The fact that I can model, I'm grateful for the changes that are happening, even if they are small. The work ethic is the driving force for all of us to be able to get our voices heard, says Steve. I think that's what these girls are doing. They're putting their ideas into action, and once their action is met with execution, then they'll be represented. Yet the triumphs have come with complications. I spent so much of my life ignoring my Asian side and not feeling white enough. And then when I finally want to accept my Asian side, I don't feel Asian enough. Being the first Asian plus model on Sports Illustrated or Vogue and getting comments of, she's half white though, Yumi says. I'm trying to recognize my own privilege of being half white in the Asian space. She points out that the majority of Asian plus size models are at least half white. I would love to see more full Asian representation, she says. I know some people don't feel seen because we are half white, and I think we have to acknowledge that and our privilege in that. I want to push for more at the end of the day. It's very rare that you'll see two Asian people on a set, Natalie chimes in, or more than one plus model, Yumi adds. It's like they're just barely trying to keep to check any of the boxes. On the flip side, the sisters have found themselves walking the line and confronting Japanese beauty standards as well. Case in point, Yumi's appearance on the cover of Vogue Japan this spring. It's a body-conscious issue, and it's just a headshot, she says, laughing. But it's okay. It's a small step. I'm just happy to be there. As someone who is half white and American, who doesn't speak the language, if they would let me inspire body change and positivity, that was part of my dream for being on Japanese Vogue, just leaving space for people who don't look like the beauty standard. Sometimes we'll get people being like, "Wow, you're so brave." And I'm like, "For what? I'm just breathing and I'm just existing," Natalie says. The truth is, we don't have to try to be anything in particular. Just us existing is the representation. So it's okay that I'm a blend. I just exist, and that's good enough. Up next, Yumi has an alternative pop EP in the works, as well as an ethically made plus-size clothing line that she hopes to launch later this year. Natalie is working on a cover EP of one of her favorite goth rock bands, Typo Negative, and is turning her attention toward acting after a turn in a thriller film that has yet to hit theaters. "You don't see a lot of Asians in films either, so I want to do that," she says, citing Gemma Chan as an inspiration. Both hope to work more with high fashion brands, who have only slowly begun to open their doors. Through it all, they'll continue to uplift each other and others like them. "We call each other pretty frequently and say, 'Hey, what's up?'" Natalie says. "I'm a huge fan of her music. I constantly have her stuff on replay. She'll send me private SoundCloud links before stuff drops. I'm a huge, huge fan and supporter. So most of the time, it's just me fangirling." "It's like, you win, I win," Natalie goes on, to which Yumi replies with a smile, "Us winning together is what makes this possible." And our next article, also from Teen Vogue, sustainable fashion activists break down their career paths. And this article is written by Donya Mominian. As climate change remains an outstanding issue, particularly for younger generations, many dedicated activists are choosing careers in sustainable fashion. While fast fashion continues to affect the environment, the movement for slow, ethical fashion grows. The push for sustainable fashion has involved a number of people, from influencers to politicians and everyone in between. There are growing platforms dedicated to providing resources for fashion enthusiasts. One of these platforms is the Sustainable Fashion Forum, which works to raise awareness and build community. Following their latest conference, Teen Vogue caught up with the Sustainable Fashion Forum's Director of Partnerships and Strategy, Ellie Hughes, and Production Director, Pame Bueno. They explained why they chose careers in sustainable fashion and what advice they would give to those who were interested. Teen Vogue: "What got you into sustainable fashion?" Ellie Hughes, EH: "Back in 2015, my perception of the fashion industry was completely rocked when I watched the Trust Cost documentary. With no prior experience, I began researching and blogging about sustainable, ethical fashion and trying to spread the word to other consumers. Through my time as a blogger, I ended up getting offered a marketing position at a fashion company focused on fair wages and creating economic opportunity for women. At that company, I learned so much about what it really takes to do things the right way and how many layers there are that the average consumer doesn't ever see." Pame Bueno, PB: "My interest in fashion sparked as a child when I watched my grandmother sew garments from her Treadle Singer machine in Sao Paulo, Brazil. I instantly became fascinated with clothing design and construction, creating my designs out of paper and any old clothes I could find. I grew up with very little, living in Bogota, Colombia, and hand-me-downs were the way my family could dress me. Instead of finding shame in this, I couldn't wait to see what I would get next and what I could do to alter it to fit my style. I had a life experience that told me that there is value in secondhand clothing and also that there is a gap in the fashion industry we're not addressing. As a young adult, I immigrated to the United States for higher education and kept dressing with the affordability and uniqueness of secondhand clothing, which I would continue to tailor to the needs of my body. After college, I continued my studies, but focused on fashion at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. I studied garment construction, and that's where my passion for sustainable fashion flourished. I upcycled men's suits for my thesis gallery show and created sculpture wearable pieces. The response from the guests was so impactful. They were awed to see just how old clothes could be made into something new. TV. How did you get involved with the Sustainable Fashion Forum? EH. As I learned more about the nuances of the industry, I shifted my focus from obsessing over individual purchasing habits to joining the larger movement, which looks to policy change and societal shifts to address the underlying systemic issues. These days, I try to find a balance of using my energy to continue to champion small, slow fashion brands through marketing and my own closet, but also work with organizations such as the Sustainable Fashion Forum to amplify conversation that tackles nuanced industry issues and effect change on a larger scale. PB. Independently, I continued studying sustainability in fashion from across the United States in Portland, Oregon, where I went to the first Sustainable Fashion Forum. I finally found where I belonged. In 2019, I went on to work with the founder, Brittany Sierra, in developing the Sustainable Fashion Forum, and the rest is history. Nothing brings me more joy than to help disrupt the fashion industry and bring to light the genius and artistry that is fashion made focused on people and the planet. TV, what advice do you have for people who are interested in working in the sustainable fashion field? EH, I would encourage anyone who's interested in the sustainable fashion industry to get involved with whatever skill set they have and to think outside the box. I am not gifted with the ability to design clothing, nor do I have the interest in starting my own line, but I can use my abilities as a marketer to bring awareness to the issues at hand. We all have a role to play, big or small. PB, though it may seem that my career path was very straightforward, it was a constant uphill battle. I met a lot of pushback due to my origin as an immigrant and my economic status. I had to be creative when paving my road into the fashion industry, since traditional paths were not at my disposal. I learned those humble beginnings could lead to some golden opportunities. My advice is your story is unique, so let it propel you forward, despite what anyone says or what is expected of you. Don't be afraid to step out of the box. Find a gap you can fill. Seek to make a positive change in your community. Work hard and look good doing it, but remember to keep it sustainable fashion. And our last article is from the Teen Magazine, An Open Letter to Future Generations. And this op-ed article is written by Elena Juarez. Future generations. We look at the world before us, searching for good, for the speck of light that makes the rest of the darkness worth it. And guess what? We've found it. In our future. In you. Right now, our world is in the midst of a crisis. We all find ourselves at the center of a battle that has been long awaited, where dust is being kicked up in our faces, and missed punches find another target. Particularly one holding up an iPhone to capture it all. It is without a doubt that circumstances will be different once enough time has passed. Perhaps discrimination will have withered back and been pulled from its roots. Perhaps war will have exhausted us to our core, so that the weapons in our hands fall to the ground. Perhaps humanity will have realized the damage our desperation for control has caused. Perhaps, perhaps, perhaps. Time, however, cannot cure these problems. It is only up to the people. And while this has come to light with our current generation, I can only hope that none in the future dismiss it. In these very moments, whispers surround us, whispers of a rebellion. No, a revolution. One meant to fight for a world wherein every soul is treated with the respect they should have been born into, with the equality no one should have to work for. The seeds have dropped into cracks, and roots have taken hold. Revolutions have sprouted. The LGBTQ movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, the women's rights movement, the climate justice movement, and the list goes on. Movements across the globe have begun, and they have spread like wildfire. A pipe dream. The past may have called it, but it no longer is. These crusades are the proof that no one can deny. Trust me, some may try. They will shout and throw fists, and sometimes weapons will be tossed around. I won't go more into detail, because I trust that you sadly understand. It is important, therefore, that one keeps their dignity in times like these. Keep your heads held high and fists strictly by your side. Take the high road, because everything else will become destroyed in the flurry of fists the others have chosen to raise. It will be difficult and, at times, even seemingly impossible, but have hope. For the love of everything, have hope. Hope has saved us before. Why wouldn't it save us now? Why wouldn't it save you later on? Don't deny its presence because of your unfamiliarity with it. Don't let it be a stranger. Open the door and let it in. Open the door and breathe out. Future generations, denial is a strong motivator of the human race. It speaks so valiantly over the horrific actions committed by our kind. However, while denial is prominent, self-awareness also takes a stand. Awareness of ourselves is a natural instinct of the human race. It is the gut feeling we have before our actions become so horribly wrong. It is what will keep us, and has kept us, from welcoming the end. Future generations, I hope you change the world. I hope you realize your potential. I hope every soul wakes up in a society that has become a little better, a little stronger. I hope. I hope that my generation has done its fair share of work. Sincerely, the current old generation. We will be hard at work. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.